Hey everybody, welcome to the AN and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Yo.
And today we're going to be talking about, this is kind of responding to a user comment we got over on animenewsnetwork.com about the podcast. One of our listeners was pretty disappointed that we kind of just fell off solo leveling and like didn't wrap it up. And you know what? That's fair. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, I can understand you've been listening to us talk about every episode for like 10-ish weeks and then suddenly we just aren't anymore. So we're gonna cover that, which did mean that I watched three episodes of solo leveling back to back, but I did it for you.
Yeah.
So we're gonna
solo leveling.
I did. I solo leveled. So we're going to talk about the finale, about whether, you know, we plan to watch the second season based on where it leaves off, sort of the pros and cons, that sort of thing. We're also
that's been confirmed, about, right? Season two
is confirmed. Yeah. I don't think that we have a release window for it. I'd have to double check, but it is definitely happening. So for those of you who did really like the show, want to see more of, you know, Jinwoo's adventure, stay tuned. There is going to be more of that. So we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about Kaiju number 8, episode 2.
Hell yeah.
Which was a fun time. Fun, gory time. Talk about that OPED stuff going on. It's kind of a unique situation there. And then we're also going to touch on Yatagarasu. I did not get to watch episode 3. Because my teenage son wanted to actually have a conversation with his mom after school today, and I thought I should do that.
Gotta embrace that. That's rare.
Rare. So I didn't get to that particular episode, but we're going to talk about it. This is going to be like a Yatagarasu podcast, okay? I know a lot of people are disappointed that it didn't make daily streaming. It didn't get enough votes in the polls, okay? I hear you. We're going to talk about that show here. So we'll be getting to that, but we also have like a little bit of news, some kind of lighthearted, funny stuff for you guys this evening. The first one is a new video game that is coming out that James pointed out to me. This is from Atlus, and they've released a trailer in both Japanese and English. I'll play the English one here for you guys here in a minute. But this game is called Metaphor ReFantasio.
And
it is supposed to be released on October 11th for PlayStation 4, 5, and Xbox and PC via Steam. So I have not watched this trailer yet. I don't know anything about this. Off-cam, James described this to me as Persona while on shrooms. So let's find out if that's true or not. And you guys can let us know after you see the trailer whether you will be playing it when this comes out. It just feels like we've had such a stacked video game release schedule lately, though. Like,
it's been absurd. I haven't even gotten to the latest Like a Dragon.
Yeah.
And I still... Freaking Final Fantasy Rebirth is the biggest game. It won't end.
Owe me a review for that game. I know.
It's so long.
James, are you doing all the side quests? Is that why? Have you even made it to Golden Saucer?
Yes. I'm at Golden Saucer. Okay. I think I'm like 75-80% through, but just so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, so this is Metaphor ReFantasio. The subtitle for the trailer is The King's Trial. I don't know if that's part of the title or what, but okay.
I truly believed that I might end the strife and discrimination that plagued our people across endless years.
The monster designs are sick.
Wow, yeah.
They remind me a little bit of a Madoka.
Yeah.
When did we do the music? Let us speak of the old vulture's last grasp at power. The tournament for the throne.
Oh, so, dang, okay.
Our first trial is to slay a monster.
You got an airship. Like we've lost a few candidates. Is that a skateboard, kind of?
It's like a hoverboard.
Okay.
A handful of feral humans.
Who did the monster designs for this? Because this is wild.
What do we believe?
Yeah.
Really?
This reminded me of stuff from like Somnium Files or something like that, too. Okay, so it's an action RPG. far as like the combat, I think. That was fun.
The smaller monsters are going to be real time, and then the big kind of event fights are going to be turn based.
Oh, okay. Each ally have a different. I can definitely see like the persona influence in here. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to like get a gauge on the setting because it's got sort of this medieval look to it, but they just showed like a lady walking in front of the group who looked like she was from like the 1960s or something, like very odd.
It isn't a utopia.
I mean, I don't trust that blonde guy at all. Like, if you're blonde and hot in an anime like that, you're usually evil. Yeah. I will not let you die in vain.
Be sent in all traces to the gallows. I'm just loving the fact that they continue to go even harder with their menu and UI design.
Yeah, right?
Like, they just won't stop. They won't slow down.
Yeah.
Even for a second.
It's also reminding me a little bit, as far as like the character design, art direction of Bayonetta, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing all this. They keep showing this guy, and I still don't trust him. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. They might get me this with this one, not gonna lie. Because I like stuff where, like, the monsters are sort of, like, psychopomp sort of stuff, like where
like something out of a Salvador Dali painting or something.
Yeah, and you look at it and you're like, oh, by taking apart the elements of this monster design, I learn more about the psychology of the villain, which is also you know how Madoka operated as well. So there was actually more to this trailer. I thought it just stopped at the date.
I guess I was reading, it's not a silent protagonist.
Okay.
Like in Persona. Mm-hmm. So this is like, they're really doing a good job of the cell shaded character models with kind of almost watercolor looking backgrounds.
Yeah.
I would say it looks more impressive to me than Persona did at times, because, you know, Persona, you can tell that a lot of the kind of abstract style is to kind of rein the budget in a bit, like you know, the environments can be a little static, and outside of the mind palaces, at least outside of the heists, but there are scenes in that that just look like you're watching like a movie or something. It looked really good.
Yeah, I'm looking at like they've got a big deluxe collector's edition for folks who want, you know, who want that. It includes the game, a steelbook, soundtrack, art book, metallic pin sticker sheet, cloth map, costume and battle background, or battle background music, a DLC, and a digital history book, and a digital.
That sounds like a great one.
Yeah. I'll show a picture right here. So, yeah. Like, this is like the cloth map you see under there, and then all the bonuses and stuff. Looks pretty decent. I was looking at the protagonist stuff because I was wondering during it if they're designed specifically to just kind of be gender neutral, because they have, I mean, their outfit I think is a skirt. If it's not a skirt, it's a like a very long trench coat sort of thing that could be a skirt. I'm not sure. But yeah, I'm just wondering. But then they have lots of different outfits. So I don't know if it's just sort of whatever you think they are, they are.
On Wikipedia, it's using he, him pronouns.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I don't know if it's, it doesn't seem like it's the kind of character that you can like customize or pick between.
Yeah.
It seems like he has like a set like personality and story, mm-hmm. but definitely kind of a more androgynous design, which I mean, that fits with the Persona style. So.
Yeah. For just like a brief plot description of the game, it says, write your destiny and rise above your fears as you step into a fantasy world unlike anything you've seen before. Fraught with unsettling mystery, the kingdom stands on a precipice. Now you must embark on a journey, overcoming obstacles and forging bonds with friends. That doesn't tell you anything. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's extremely generic. You will make friends and overcome obstacles in this game. That is, anyway.
Ooh. On Wikipedia, it has a slightly more... descriptive one from the Atlas press release, it looks like.
Oh, okay.
So, So it takes place in the United Kingdom of Uchronia, which is a great name for a fantasy kingdom, by the way. A medieval fantasy realm that acts as a mirror to the modern real world. An assassination of its king sparks chaos and unrest through the kingdom, while also invoking a unique form of magic only previously known to the king, known as royal magic. These events end up setting the stage for a tournament to be held across the world in order to decide the throne successor. Okay. And then the main protagonist is a boy of the Elda tribe who has been ostracized by wider society for being tainted with forbidden magic and the subject of discrimination and prejudice. And he has to embark on a quest to lift a curse placed on his friend, who just so happens to be the Prince of Uchronia. So,
okay,
that seems pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't cursed for just having sick moves on his skateboard.
Ostracized. I mean, you know, how cool would it be if we got like a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 7 Atlas crossover? Like, I know that Activision or whoever has gobbled up whatever team made those awesome Tony Hawk 1 and 2 reboot games.
Yeah.
But we need that. We need more good skating games, man.
Yeah. You need to quit giving away your great ideas for free on the podcast, James.
I know. I need to open up like a consulting firm at this point.
Yeah. And I know a guy who's running one of those. I can give you his card after the podcast and see if there he can get go. You in touch with the right people. Yeah. You're the idea man. Yeah.
Look, any isekai that makes a world halfway as interesting as the stuff we saw in that trailer, mm-hmm. you're automatically, well, I don't know if you're going to be selling like gangbusters because it seems like people don't always want that, but it would be a good show.
It would be good. It would be good. It'd be critically acclaimed at least, even if no one watched it. The critics would love it.
Man.
All right. So moving on to our next news item. This one is coming in from Nicholas Dupree, although he doesn't know it. Hey, Nick, we're going to talk about the kids' Shueisha history line. So Shueisha is a publisher in Japan, and they're publishing a new series of history books for aimed at children, but they have art by manga creators that you may know. And we found it rather amusing to see who drew what. So let's dive into history here for a minute and look at the wonderful offerings that are coming in October. So October 4th this year, they're going to start releasing this series. I have put Google Translate on this just to make it easier for everyone here, but see if maybe I wanted to point out specifically that they Kohei Horikoshi of My Hero Academia drew this art here for the glory of the great empire of Rome, roughly translated. That's
sexy anime Cleopatra.
That's probably, so probably Julius Caesar there, looking more fearsome than I've ever really seen him. Thought he was also more of a like politician type than necessarily a great Roman emperor type. But yeah, it's supposed to be ancient Rome during a Byzantine Empire, I guess. We've got Yuki Tabata of Black Clover covering Christianity and the development of Europe. So that's probably Joan of Arc here.
Yeah.
Waving her flag. Yeah. We've got Posca de Mizu, the artist behind The Promised Neverland, doing Renaissance and Reformation. So this is their interpretation of Leonardo da Vinci. Most of them, I felt like, did a pretty good job. I immediately know who the historical figure is when looking at them, despite the different art styles. as we move through history, this here is the mangaka behind Moriarty the Patriot drawing a very patriotic-looking Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
But I would like to draw everyone's attention here to Hiro Araki's version of Napoleon during the French Revolution. I'm pretty sure.
Is Napoleon already a JoJo's character? Like, has he shown up in the manga at some point?
I don't know. Like he's got JoJo energy, right? Napoleon has JoJo energy. But I feel like this exact pose, isn't this from a famous work of art?
Yeah, it's from, I don't remember the name of the portrait, but it's like the most famous portrait of Napoleon.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously a much much swankier color design than the original portrait, as Araki is tending to do.
Yeah, definitely introduced his colors there. This one here is Assassination Classroom artist, Yusei Matsui. Is that Karl Marx? The progress of modernization and imperialism?
No, that's not Marx.
No?
My guess would be... gosh, I mean, if we're talking, this would be 1800s. I'm not entirely sure who that is.
Yeah.
Although they missed a great opportunity to have the Assassination Classroom guy depict the assassination of Franz Ferdinand. That would have been perfect.
It would have. Also, for those of you who don't know a lot about the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, there's a great podcast I listen to called... Oh God, it's on the same network as Lore. Is it Royal Blood?
Ooh, I haven't listened to Lore in a hot minute. Aaron?
I'll get you guys the name of it in the notes when this goes on to YouTube. But listen to the actual what happened to assassinate Franz Ferdinand is wild.
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
That man died because a dude needed a sandwich after he failed.
Yeah. Just a cavalcade of failure and ridiculousness over and over again. I remember learning in school things, someone just like threw a bomb into his car during a motorcade, and it was not exactly that.
No, they tried to.
It was actually much sillier.
Chat saying that's probably Otto von Bismarck, which makes sense with the Iron Cross there.
Yes,
for some reason, my first instinct, because I recognized he had to be like Austrian or Prussian or German. I was like, oh, is that Kaiser Wilhelm? I'm like, we're not there yet. But
now that you guys have pointed it out, he looks very, this drawing, he looks similar to his depiction in, was it one of the Civilization games or something I played a million years ago that had Bismarck in it? Anyway, is this not Karl Marx though?
No, that's Lenin.
That's Lenin. All right. This is a Golden Kamuy artist, Satoru Noda's depiction of Lenin. We've been debating who this overly attractive U.S. president is, because it's supposed to take place during the Great Depression. And James, you said Wilson, right?
I mean, that has to be Wilson. That doesn't look anything like FDR who else would it be, right? FDR during the Depression.
Yeah, I was trying.
I mean, if it's like from Russian Revolution, that's 1918.
Yeah.
Wilson was what, no. He wasn't 1919, was he?
I'm not positive.
No, I think he was. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's like, I don't think this looks anything like FDR, but I feel like the vibe of the drawing itself is like feels more like how people think of FDR as far as like being stalwart and very, and all of the speech stuff going on in the front with his fireside chats and stuff like that. Like
you said, there's not enough racism here for Wilson. So I don't really know. Maybe if he was in a Klan hood, then I would.
Chat saying Wilson was president 1912 to 1920.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause two terms. Okay. Cause I knew he was president during World War I, and I was like, well, then that wouldn't, you know, it would have been over by 1918. I forgot it was a two-term. So that makes sense. There we go.
Okay. Yeah. So does Wilson look anything like this? Like he doesn't ever remember.
He was like a skinny guy, like a skinny white guy.
This is drawn by Shinichi Sakamoto, who is the artist behind Innocence and the really good Dracula manga retelling. Oh my God. What's it called? Chat, let me know. It's very good. Okay, and then next to this, we have the Spy Family artist, Tatsuya Endo's depiction of Hitler and Winston Churchill. I almost said Woodrow Wilson, which would be, again, wrong. No.
I love that Churchill, by the way. He looks like Truman Capote.
He does look like Truman Capote. Yeah. He does. I have to honestly say that I like this depiction of Hitler. Don't take this out of context, because he looks frail and small, and not like there. He doesn't look at all intimidating, really. Like, he's not giving off like an aura of power at all in this picture. He just looks like a stupid man. He looks
like an exhausted amphetamine addict that's just weeks away from losing the war.
Yeah. Just kind of like his cheekbones are going in. He looks malnourished. Greasy hair. Great job.
Churchill kind of looks like he's going to eat him.
I could see that.
Like he's a titan that's about to just like bite Hitler in half.
They do kind of make an interesting comparison between the two. Just overall, I think I like that color or cover a lot. The one next to it is also by Shinichi Sakamoto, but this one looks less stylized than the other one. I kind of get more of his art sense out of. This one almost looks less, I don't know, it's strange. Anyway,
it's weird because that, like, it's so funny because that both, you can tell that's supposed to be JFK,
right? But it's not, but
that also looks nothing like JFK.
Yeah, like I know that's JFK, but JFK. It's not really.
Gandhi looks fine. That looks like a,
yeah, it looks like Gandhi.
Gorbachev, I mean, you know, he has that little birthmark, so
yeah, which makes him easy to identify. Kennedy is a miss there.
Wait, one second. No, go back to Kennedy. My brain, what does he look like? He looks like, oh my gosh, he looks like sexy Squidward.
Oh no, I kind of see it. I was gonna say that I felt like they put more emphasis on like his chin and like his nose. Like, I don't remember Kennedy having a very prominent nose, not in the same way that people think of like Nixon, right? So it's just he's kind of got Squidward face proportions.
And I mean, look, I get it, we're Americans, and JFK, he's one of those presidents that you see a lot over the course of your lifetime, so it's kind of hard to get his face wrong. But yeah, that's that looks like you know what he also looks like. This is just because my wife and I were just watching Twin Peaks. He looks exactly like Deputy Andy from Twin Peaks. Oh,
does he?
He looks like a big old goober.
Someone else put in here that he looks like John Cena, and I kind of see that as well.
I can see that.
Yeah. You see what his face looks like going back and to the left. I guess so.
To the left.
Yeah. Last two we've got here. We've got the Thermae Romae artist, Mari Yamazaki. She's drawn Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. And I don't immediately know who these other two men are.
Is that not Kim Jong? Kim doesn't Kim
Jong Un or Kim Jong Il?
Kim Jong Un's father.
Right.
Or Kim Jong Il's father. Ill.
Oh. Yeah.
The original one, the first one.
It could be, because I was going to say, it doesn't look like the current one at all.
So. Or is that Mao? That could be. That's also could be Mao.
Oh, you know what? I think it's Mao.
I thought we already had Mao. Didn't we have Mao at
Bay? No, I don't think we already had Mao.
Oh, okay. See, I
yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. We didn't have Mao.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Mao.
Yeah. And then I'm assuming that the guy at top is Saudi Arabian, maybe, or Iranian. I don't think it's the nuts of Iranian guy who's not in power anymore. But I'm not sure.
Well, Kim Il Sung. Thank you, chat. That's the name of the
Kim Il Sung. Okay. Okay. They are saying Yasser Arafat. Yeah. Someone wrote. I don't want to ruin it.
Ahmadinejad.
Yeah, I don't think it's him. Arafat, and he's Palestinian. All right, thank you. Sorry, I was completely off base with that. And then the last one here is also by Polskie Dymizu, and this is just supposed to be like children of today, I think.
It says increasing globalization. So yeah. A diverse future, which is that's cute. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just mad. Now, could I just say?
Yes.
Another missed opportunity. And again, Shueisha, feel free to take me up on this. I won't even charge you.
Okay.
But what we needed was Tatsuki Fujimoto drawing Margaret Thatcher getting chainsawed in half by Chainsaw Man. So we didn't get that, and I'm disappointed. But again, it's not too late. You
could. That's what actually happened, too. Like, if you were there, you know, that's exactly what happened to the Iron Lady.
Yes. Not that iron, apparently.
No. Taken out by a regular old chainsaw.
She turns out she was the curmudgeon devil. And so... she was the spot of bother devil.
Oh, man. I have not thought of Margaret Thatcher since I watched that documentary about that horrible British man... was in the music industry.
Music industry?
I'm pretty sure that's how he started.
I think Jim will fix it guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the Jim will fix it guy. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was kind of like
he did music, I think.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, Nick. I'm mixing him up with Gary Glitter, a different horrible British guy. Yeah, my bad. Everyone's like, which one? Yes, the TV guy. Yes, the kid show. Dude.
Jimmy Savile. Okay.
Jimmy Savile. Yeah, they were friends.
Of course they were. Jimmy Savile, don't Wikipedia him if you have if you're sensitive about stuff. That guy's like one of history's monsters, it turns out.
Yeah.
That guy's like, he's next level evil, which is just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that documentary, I think, last year or year before, and I was like, wow. You can just get away with anything.
And like openly talk about it, apparently, to like a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't even want to get into the hospital stuff and everything. No, it was just, just bad time. Bad time, guys. Unlike the wonderful history books we just showed you, those were a good time. That was a good time, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's all we have for the news today. But if you found that interesting, I'll put in the YouTube comment like where you can go to the website to kind of look at those books a little more. If you happen to, I think you probably wouldn't need to be super fluent in Japanese to understand them because they are geared towards like a young kid audience. So it might even be good like learning material, practice some of your basic kanji and stuff.
You probably get the furigana over the kanji too.
Yeah, before, yeah.
Which is really nice. Helpful.
It is. So just an idea. With that being said, all right, James, we have to put Solo Leveling to bed. We gotta tuck Jinwoo in.
Mm-hmm.
Give him a little pat. Yep. Turn the light off.
Give him a cup of warm milk so he can sleep.
Yep. Yep. So I watched the last three episodes of Solo Leveling, and I am now fully caught up. I am happy to say that I think I basically understand it. With as much information as it's given us, right? Like, there's a lot of moving parts, actually, which is something we talked about in the past, that there's just a lot of kind of subplots, and a lot of those threads are left kind of just dangling there at the end of season one. It's still more focused on, like, Jinwoo's journey, but there's tons of stuff just kind of happening in the background. So, spoilers for Solo Leveling starts here. If you don't want spoilers for the end of Solo Leveling season one, come back later after you've watched it. The first season's been over for a little while, so I do not feel guilty about talking about this. You've had a little bit of time because I was lazy and slow and didn't watch it until now.
Well, we had a whole preview guide to get through.
And I was in Japan and there was a lot going on. So that being said, Jinwoo's a necromancer.
Yes.
What do you think about that changeover there, James?
I'm so sorry. We were just discussing Jimmy Savile, and
I'm sorry I brought up Jimmy Savile.
I know. My brain went in a completely wrong direction when you said necro, and I went, "Oh right, Solo Leveling."
yes.
Because for a second I was like, "Wait, can we talk about that?" No. No. The other. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Damn you, Jimmy Savile. So I thought, I guess I'll say, from a gaming nerd perspective, coming from someone who is currently kind of chipping away at Diablo Immortal and mm-hmm. waiting for that new Loot 2.0 update to come out for Diablo 4, I think the Necromancer class is cool.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. And yeah. I mean, I think it could be cool to see what kind of interesting action shenanigans he can get up to with an army of corpses.
Yeah, it felt like a way to kind of, so up until this point, like, he and his buddy have been paying off a bunch of people to stand around so that they can just go farm out dungeons, essentially, that they're overqualified for. But now they won't have to do that, right? Because maybe Jinwoo can just pull up his army and now they have enough people. I'm wondering if it'll kind of give them a shortcut through that.
How did you feel? The one thing that bugged me about the Necromancer thing, and I get that it's the gimmick and I'm sure they're doing something with it, but when he just like got super insta XP buffed all the way up to like a new like second tier Necromancer class.
Yeah.
Just by like, not just by doing nothing really. I mean, mm-hmm. it said it's because, you know, you finished the battle with over 50% health. You defeated X number of enemies. And he just like keeps getting all these XP rewards. That was where it started to lose me a bit, where I was like, okay, like, I think we might have reached the tipping point where the whole excessive power fantasy number one ultimate super powerful awesome guy thing is getting a little old.
I mean, because it was already, I mean, sometimes it feels like they do just enough to kind of justify his power increase or new ability or whatever, and then they never just stop there. There's always like, and also you get all this other stuff too. Like, is it not enough in a single episode for this guy just to like get a completely new job class?
Yeah.
And be able to like res a bunch of knights. Plus, you know, he got three tries and successfully rezzed the boss. So now he's got a boss and a whole army of knights. And he's got a new weapon that works on armor stuff when he, you know, when his previous one wasn't working for that reason. And he's got
like, if Goku got to Super Saiyan 3 when he first fights Frieza, where it's like, okay, like, we can stop now, you know, we can, one power up is fine.
I mean, again, all the action sequences looked really good. The you know, the cinematography was great. I liked how they did some non-traditional animation in certain parts to kind of like articulate the emotion, like the rage going on and stuff like that. And things definitely looked cool pretty much throughout the entire show, I think. I mean, you know, character design changes aside, I mean, when things were heating up, like it always delivered. So, I mean, well, I was thinking about this while watching this show, and I'm like, maybe, you know, I need to just accept that Solo Leveling is a Jason Statham level anime, and that's all it's really trying to be. And it's just about dude does impossible cool shit to kill things over and over, and you're just supposed to enjoy that. And maybe I just don't need to think, or shouldn't, I'm not expected to be thinking about the power scaling or kind of how like OP BS it is, because that's the point. It's OP BS and that's supposed to be fun.
I think for me, the problem is, and we talked about this a little off mic, not just the pacing of like the side stuff with all the other characters that we don't really care about yet or really know what they're about, other than they're doing a thing on an island and there's some kind of mystery. And
they also don't name drop them enough. You need to start repeating these people's names enough times so that I can remember what their names are, because I don't know what their names are really, other than I would recognize it if I saw it, the name of the older brother that's supposed to want to kill him now because he killed his
younger brother,
like that. Right. But I don't know anyone else's name, really.
No. Well, and not only is that a kind of a pacing issue, at least for me, mm-hmm. where we have these plot threads that don't even build up to like a story beat that you can leave off on with like a satisfying cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. It just more feels like there's a separate show going on that's gotten through maybe half of one episode of setup, and then it just kind of stops. And that's another thing. But even when, if you just look at it as a power scaling, hyper intense, awesome, badass fantasy, I think my problem that kind of ties into the whole necromancer immediate job upgrade is that we're getting to the point where he's getting so strong that I don't really have a frame of reference anymore for what that means for him.
Yeah.
Like, is he getting so strong that he can now stand toe to toe with some of these other characters who haven't really done anything but talk for the whole season? Yeah. Is he so strong that when he fights them, he's just going to like one punch them into mist?
I
don't know. And so it makes the power-ups feel less satisfying because, you know, when you're playing like Diablo or any other RPG, you generally have an understanding that, you know, I know some people do this where they'll grind to like level 99 before they leave the first area, but you usually only like grind and like, you know, go really hard on the leveling when you know there's some like threat that you're not ready for or that you want to maybe over prepare for so that it's not as much of a problem.
Yeah.
But since we don't know, like, I mean, it's really just kind of random threat after random threat and he just keeps winning. Every time he gets a power up, it feels less like he's growing so that when he finally fights this guy or when he finally does this thing, he'll be able to overcome the challenge, and more that it's just like different moves he can use.
Yeah. So it feels like, I mean, his end goal is to get strong enough to be able to take on that castle, which will give him an item, which should let him cure his mom's disease. Right. And he fought the Cerberus thing in front of it. So while he does have like something like that in mind, I also agree with you that like, I don't feel like we have a good grasp of how he knows that he will be good enough to take on that. He just kind of like thinks about it and he's like, I'm not yet. And that's just supposed to be like, I got to grind some more. And I don't really have a frame of reference for why or how he really knows that. He hasn't been in the castle. He hasn't, you know, he's just fought the Cerberus thing in front of it. So while there's like that idea in mind, it's still not a great frame of reference to trying to figure out how far away or close he is to achieving that goal. Yeah. So in the meantime, he's just been doing all this grinding and leveling with the sea level dungeons. Why are they even sea levels?
Yeah.
I mean, he says at one point that he thinks he's between a B and an A. Again, don't really know how he knows that because it's not like he's fought a ton of people at those levels. He's fought one guy who was he was an S, or was he an A? The
murder guy.
I think
he was an A.
Yeah.
But he like beat that guy almost no problem.
Right.
Is the thing. Like, that's another thing that I'm confused by, where it says that, oh, like, you're only like this rank of hero, but the show I thought was basically making it clear that he's way stronger than that. He's like masking his level, or his level is incongruent with his strength because of the, you know, the weird rebirth thing that happened and all that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, I don't know. Was that guy like a really weak A? What is a strong A?
Yeah.
What do the S heroes do? Because the dungeon that he died in was an S dungeon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know what that threat is, the spooky statue things.
Right.
But again, like, we don't really know any other element of this world or any other, like, all of these characters, like this brother that's going to kill him. Like, how strong is he? We don't really.
Yeah. The guy who's too busy with his stock market. His day right job. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vice696 says that the murder guy he killed was a high B, so he wasn't an A.
Okay.
Again, it'd been a while since I watched that episode because there was a long break. Nick says, if we have to talk about power scaling this much, then it's not a good show. Well, I mean, some people, like, it's just like the Jujutsu Kaisen thing again. Some people are really into like kind of keeping these sort of things going. And I understand that in the same way that it's why we have some videos on our YouTube channel that's like, who would win in a fight? People who enjoy like that kind of theoretical battle stuff will probably also enjoy all the technical stuff that's going on here. But yeah, if I shut my brain off, I think I can just sort of like enjoy it on, as long as the like animation stays at the quality that it is. I'm not, as like some people in chat are saying, I'm personally not like, I hate grinding. I play video games. I do ones that involve, you know, leveling and stats and all that other sort of stuff. But I've always hated grinding. I've done it out of necessity in some like some of the older RPGs that I played, like Final Fantasy VII and stuff, when I just wanted to have an edge up on like an upcoming boss fight and stuff. But I don't enjoy grinding at all.
I will grind because, especially as I get older, I just hate getting stuck in games. I hate having to redo fights. I hate
that too. I don't know,
there's only so much time in the day.
Yeah.
And so, but I don't like the process of grinding, right? I put on a podcast and like distract myself because I'm just hitting the same button over and over, and there's nothing fun about that to me.
Yeah.
And like I mean, you know, I'm more, I think, on like on Nick's side, where I personally find a lot of the ways that shows like these approach power scaling to be kind of inherently damaging to my interest in the story.
Mm.
But that isn't to say, like, for instance, it's not really power scaling, but when it comes to like really thinking about like the powers and their interactions and how they play off each other, I think I've discovered I'm much more interested in it when it's conceptual.
Yeah.
Like Undead Unluck is a really good example, where in that show, you know, all of the negators have their powers that negate certain concepts or certain abilities or, you know, time or space or what have you. Yeah. And the thing that makes the fights in that show so interesting to me is that it's never about like, oh, you know, this is a level 27.5 power, and when you divide it by the subclass of the Arknight, you get the supreme evolution of the de-evolution power that is the one weakness. And it's nothing like that. It's just, you know, this power stops time, and this power, this guy has the ability to like, you know, speed things up with this power. How are they going to like bounce off of each other and find a creative way to overcome that? It's not just literally smashing stat screens together until someone's is bigger, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen shows like Undead Unluck. I'm glad it hasn't like gotten there yet, but I've also seen shows that start out that way, but then, and I think Jujutsu Kaisen has done this as well, where it's turned into a thing where I no longer really understand what anything is doing. Like they'll give me a long explanation and it'll have something to do with physics or something, and I'm just like, I didn't come here for this.
That's genuinely I kind of put up my hands and go, I'm just gonna watch all the flashing colors and punchy fists, and I'm gonna assume the one that's punching harder is winning, and
whoever wins, I'm sure it made sense in universe based on whatever you told me, and I'll just accept that because it's, you know, it's your sandbox. I don't understand the rules of it.
Chainsaw Man. That's another great one, because how powerful is it? How afraid are people of it? Boom. There you go.
Yeah. And I'm like,
there we go. That's great. That's all I need.
So as far as like, James, if you're not assigned to write reviews for it, do you think you would watch season 2 of Soul?
No, not at all. Okay. And I know that was quick. I don't think it's a bad show at all.
Yeah,
I think it's well made. So far as these, it works like a video game, even though it's not a video game concepts, which I inherently just don't really care for.
Yeah,
when it's just we have stats, right? If it was like this works like a video game, but the video game is freaking Joust or Pac-Man, we're all in Pac-Man world. That would be interesting. But I don't really love it often feels kind of lazy to me when, even though it isn't a video game, it's just a regular world, we're still just using the same video game tropes because that's what everyone else does. Of those shows, this is one of the better ones insofar as the animation's good, the action's great. I'm still kind of vaguely interested in what the hell is going on with the spooky menu and why that's there and what all that's for. But I don't care enough to watch anymore.
Yeah, I'm like, you've got me a little bit on the hook on whatever's going on. I think it was called Juju Island.
Yeah.
There was some kind of massacre there, and maybe bugs are maybe the monsters are evolving or something. Kind of curious about that. Don't understand how what's going on that island plays into the gates stuff. And hey, maybe those characters on the island are actually really cool, and we just don't know that yet. I don't know. But yeah, I probably would not watch it week to week. It might be something that I would like binge in chunks or something.
Yeah, if there was a Mugen Train style movie, like maybe 2 seasons from now, when there were like more characters and maybe the plot had become a little more interesting, I would watch that.
Yeah. 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 I do think like the animation quality of it does at points reach like a cinematic level. And so if they were really making it for theaters, I think they could make something pretty fun to watch.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to new shows. We did it. All right. We covered the end of Solo Leveling. We gave you our takes, you know.
It was fine.
It was okay. Yeah. So let's get into Kaiju number 8, episode 2. We talked about episode 1 on what anime should you be watching. I think it was last week, actually, because this one also premiered kind of late. But first thing I want to talk about is, James, what's your opinion on the opening sequence? From what I can tell, it was actually animated by Studio Kara.
I think it's great. I think this opening and Go Go Loser Ranger, I think, are my two favorite openings of the season.
Yeah.
And they're both, you know, really creative, really different looking.
Yeah.
And the music is just, it hits pretty hard. So I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like the opening. It's kind of got this tunnel vision sort of kaleidoscope effect going for quite a lot of it until the monster shows up in it. I like the song as well. I thought it was fun. The ending sequence is much more mellow by a long shot. Completely different animation style and everything, but I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, by the way, I saw that Young Blood music video you were talking about last week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you were 100% right on every count. I was watching and I was going, oh, I see. This is
old.
Not for me.
It's not for me.
I'm Kafka. I'm the old man now that everyone is just looking at with suspicion and disgust.
Yeah. I was watching that whole thing and I was like, oh, okay. This is just probably how my parents felt about stuff I was listening to.
It's like, is this what the baby boomers felt about Will Smith when he did Parents Just Don't Understand? Is this the same thing?
I haven't thought about that song in a long time. That's funny.
I think about that song surprisingly often.
Really? Yeah. Really?
I don't even know why. It's just, I saw it at that perfect age where it just imprinted on my brain.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, parents just don't understand.
They right? don't.
DJ They're Jazzy just... Jeff and Will Smith.
They are with it. It was probably the most... They are with it. Remind me not to say that again. So Kaiju number 8. This is most recent episode. I mean, it kind of replays a little bit from the last episode before we start, but Kafka, you know, whole ass swallowed a kaiju while he was in the hospital. Now he's a kaiju man. He can go from kaiju to man, although he hasn't really mastered that ability yet. And he's passed his exam now to... Well, the first part of the exam to join the self-defense force.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the episode is centered on him fighting a kaiju for the first time and saving a little girl and her mom, right?
Yeah, the first episode is very much like a prologue, introducing the characters, setting the world. But this is really where we get like what the show is going to be, where Kafka transforms into the skeleton and punches monsters and makes
it. Is that just your name for it? The Skellington? Skellington?
Well, I mean, like Jack Skellington, right?
Well, I mean, I know what the reference is. I'm just saying that, like,
I'm sure I got it from something. I can't remember at this point. But
yeah. I mean,
he's so adorable.
He's so cute. So This episode, it was a pretty good mix of like action comedy. I felt like a lot of the comedy is like reaction stuff from Kafka in his new form. This is him attempting to smile, but he just kind of looks like he's going to eat a human at any moment.
He looks like he's about to be cast in a Venom Yaoi fan film.
See, now I'm already like there.
Tom Hardy is the POV character of this. And
I'm already like mentally in a place where someone has made the Kaiju number 8 / Venom Dojin, and that's just that's got to be a thing that exists, right? Like someone done that yet?
Again, these are I'm giving these away, guys.
Drop the link in the subscription or in the comments, please. Just get in the comments. All right. All right. So I thought, you know, a lot of the reaction stuff is pretty dang funny. I feel like this is just like meme reactions. Like
there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential profile pictures for social media. There's a lot of
that one was one of my favorites.
Yeah, this one's very good because he looks terrifying and cute at the same time. This part is where he changed forms briefly, and it was weird and disgusting.
Yeah.
And yeah, his
body is a mess of horror, and he doesn't know what to do about it.
Yeah, like at this point, like he has got like tentacle legs kind of going. There's some sort of muscle or vein type heads growing out of his shoulder, and then he gets the mouth from Alien and it eats a bird. So yeah.
He's got a xenomorph tongue.
Yeah, he's got a xenomorph tongue. Yes, okay. Can we he pees through his nipples, and I'm not okay with this. And I feel like we spent too much.
They made it yellow. They never do that in anime.
I know, it's usually like rainbow or something. I feel like we spent like
watercolored or they'll do like a match cut where it's like a fountain or something.
We spent too much time talking about a megaverse and not enough time trying to figure out how this works. How does he pee through his nipples, James?
I mean, to me, this is pretty straightforward. He just pees through his nipples. I don't, you know, I'm assuming there's some tubes that hook up to something. And
those are really, really long urethras. If they are going all the way from the kidney sort of area up through the nipples.
Yeah, they're like overall straps, but for his insides.
How do you just what the fuck, James? Overall strap for his inside.
I like how that was the one that broke you.
It is. Well, Pui Pui Mole Sauce is in here saying, can you imagine the kidney stones?
Oh god, they're like the size of lemons, I bet. That's not okay.
I don't think they would be any bigger. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how much sodium he's taking in.
Yeah. I also, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I want to point out that, like, fluid through the nipples does not operate the same way as fluid through the urethra, okay? Like, nipples are more like a spongy material. It's more like a sponge with, anyway.
Well, but no, he's a kaiju, right? Maybe it's like, you know, like the nozzle of a spray bottle, right? Uh-huh. And if it twists in one direction, it's like a direct stream. But then it can become a cone if it needs to, you know, to cover more surface area.
I don't know if I can read this comment aloud on the podcast.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, but I am also of the opinion yes. Although, you know, for science, where are even the erogenous zones, though?
Ooh, I'm just gonna go ahead and say, on the inside of his little exterior carapace plate.
Yeah, I see that.
Like if you scritch that, I'm sure that's probably feeling kind of kinky.
Yeah, and upper thigh spot.
Is that what
you're talking about? Yeah.
And then the horns, obviously. Gotta go, you know, the horns.
Yeah. And Don agrees with you on the horns in the comments.
Oh, yeah. No.
Nick does bring up he has a tongue that is substantial.
Yes. And sometimes is also a mouth. So that's got to be doing something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fair. Fair, fair.
I don't know, those glowy, the glowy highlight lines, those are probably doing something.
Something.
Or I don't know, maybe those are like really tough. Maybe those don't feel anything.
They're maybe, you know, I know that he pees through the nipples, but what if this is also sort of like a Shape of Water situation, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Or I mean, maybe something pops out of his back. Maybe we're just not thinking big enough here.
Yeah, I mean, kaiju. There's all kinds of possibilities there. I've seen all kinds of yeah. So anyway, that was a nice diversion. But to be honest, not a ton. That was Tonari. Not a lot happened in this episode. Otherwise, James, I don't think sent me. Oh, wait. Why is Tonari in here? This is the same folder, James.
Yeah.
James.
Why is this told here? You every week I am going to find a way to talk about my boy Buccio.
Yeah.
I wasn't joking. I'm being very serious.
So this means Buccio has achieved a more convincing human transformation at this point.
Oh, Lindsay, he's gotten so good at it. You'd be so proud. He uses his shape-shifting powers to save people and to be a little badass.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cry if I think about it too much. He does this because they want to play a prank on their mom.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to pretend to be his big brother. But of course, mom sees through it, but she humors him. So that he feels good, and he starts to cry, and I start to cry. Everyone cries.
So sweet.
Oh, this show, Lindsay, it's so good. It's so adorable.
I should have given you something really awful as a counterpoint, but I was nice this season. I don't think
you didn't. Yeah, you didn't give me Tadaima or Kairi or one of those awful isekais that I can't even remember anymore.
I could have given you unnamed memory, instead of Rebecca.
I feel like. Wait, unnamed memory. Which one was that?
Yeah, that was the one in your review where you talked about how in fantasy settings they can make good world building, and then in this one they just didn't, and they're like,
I got that mixed up with, I thought unnamed memory was okay. Yeah. I was just really annoyed that, again, for some reason, a fantasy show is going to start off by showing us literally nothing of the setting and then have a kind of boring conversation for half the episode, but it picked up. I thought you were talking about Alfred E. Newman show Oblivion Battery.
Oh, no one got Oblivion Battery. The people didn't want it.
The people rejected Alfred.
The people rejected Oblivion Battery. No one is reviewing the weird thick neck show where no one looks the same for more than a few moments. This is why we picked up Yatagarasu as well, because I kind of expect Kaiju Number 8 to be, you know, a lot of like good horror reaction faces. But as far as like plot to discuss or like big twists and things, it doesn't really strike me as that kind.
Although, Lindsay, you did miss one screenshot from this week's episode that I feel really encapsulates the essence of the podcast in many ways.
This one?
Yep, no one out there.
I'm not an old man. I'm still just 32.
Yeah.
This part was kind of dorky. It was like, let's find a way to show off this girl's superpower. We're going to have her throw his entire van into a different parking spot because she wanted to park in space 55 because 5 was her lucky number that day.
And as someone who is going through some pretty major car troubles at the moment, can I just say, screw you, girl.
Yeah. That's just a company van too.
Yeah, that's coming out of his pay.
Yeah,
the one.
Yeah,
you just ruined his year, you jerk.
Yeah, all because she needed to park in number 55.
I would have had such a crush on her when I was 15 too, but now I'm just like, how dare you?
Yeah,
like just park in whatever spot. You freaking zoomer! Come on.
Zoomer. Yeah, it was kind of a ridiculous interaction, like in general, but I guess that's how they wanted to introduce her or whatever. She's going to be the kind of snide, uppity one. I'm sure her dad's rich or something, and she'll be a counterpoint to the other girl who's the more quiet, studious, very serious type. And all of his shenanigans will usually go over her head, but she secretly finds them endearing. Guys, we've watched a lot of anime, okay? Like, kind of get what we're going also, through here.
I'm just kidding, Zoomers. We love you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we do. Really, you're the lifeblood of the audience. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
But don't wreck people's cars, man.
Don't wreck people's cars. Yeah.
It's not cool. You'll understand when you have to pay insurance, all right? You'll get it.
You'll get it. Yeah. Yeah. This was also my favorite part. I like hybrid Kafka, where he has monster mouth but is otherwise human, because
there's going to be so much porn.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much porn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's almost kind of scaly, right? Like, it's like,
well, I mean, he just has the whole monster thing going on. Like,
yeah.
He's like the schlubby dad bod version of what Venom is bringing out in people. And that's,
yeah,
that is power that most people, I don't even know that they could be responsible with.
Yeah. I feel like the only way people would find him hotter is if he was also like had a disgusting apartment.
Yeah. He kind of does.
I don't remember his apartment.
Oh yeah. His sink was like just
nasty. You know,
I mean, I have been known to take a little too long to swap the dishes out, but man, that boy had a pile.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, everyone put links in the comments. Maybe we'll share them on the podcast next week. I already regret saying this. All right. we're already over, but I do want to get to Yatagarasu. So I didn't get to episode 3, but as far as like episode 1 and 2, we talked about episode 1 again, 2 episodes back on the podcast for what anime you should be watching. Episode 2 introduced, like the secondary, Yukia, the secondary mm-hmm. protagonist. We did see him briefly in episode 1 because he and his brother, younger brother, were saved once they like kind of slid off a cliff or something by the emperor in his crow form. And we get a callback to that at the end of episode 2, but Yukia's, he's kind of a little shit. I like him. I really like how they set up the drama between him and like other members of the village and even within his own family, because he has a different mother than his siblings.
Yeah.
Right. And so he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder relating to that. Mostly it seems like he's out for the aristocracy a bit. Like, he's pissed that they upended his whole family, took him from his mother and everything just over BS decorum and stuff. So I'm rooting for him. But his little attitude and he pretends to be incompetent at fights and is actually a very good swordsman. He's ended up now serving the emperor because he got in a fight. So that's where I left off at. But James, why don't you catch us up on episode 3?
Yeah, so episode 3 is basically all about Yukia kind of getting into his role as the emperor's kind of new errand boy, basically his new aide. And honestly, that's like, the show's still very much in like the seed sowing stage of things,
mm-hmm.
because we get hints through some of the chores that Yukia has to do that the emperor is basically aware that there are people plotting against him, maybe plotting mm-hmm. to assassinate him, and that he is kind of not really fulfilling his duties as far as engaging with the women at the Cherry Blossom Palace.
Yeah.
That's kind of their part of the story this week, where they're basically just like hanging out and waiting for him to come around, and he's not.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of creating some tension between all the ladies.
Yeah.
And Yuki is basically discovering that the emperor kind of sucks. Like, he makes him do all of these ridiculous chores, and he can be very blunt. You know, he's like, don't be an idiot. Don't be a blockhead. Like, do the chores right. And Yuki is like, I've been literally working all day flying around in my crow form, not eating food, trying to get your stupid chores done. And but eventually they kind of start to bond a little bit, and you can see that like the emperor has a soft spot for the kid. I guess the most interesting things for me and this might be because I watched the first two episodes right in the middle of Preview Guide, and so my memory of them is a little foggy.
Yeah.
But I know we talked about how the horses
are crows.
Yeah. We're like, that's so weird. But in this episode, it actually goes way into the whole culture of it, and the world building is kind of interesting. So one of the things that we find out after Yukia basically gets screwed over by the Emperor and transforms in front of the ladies, which is a huge taboo, I guess, like to actually see people transform from bird to crow. Like, you're not supposed to see that.
Okay.
And so, but the Emperor kind of, he basically shoves Yukia to cause a distraction so that people don't realize that he's spying on his would-be brides. And Yukia gets attacked by all the guards for a minute before he gets rescued by another one of the Emperor's servants. And it creates, like, it's honestly kind of funny, where just seeing this, like, brief 30-second fight, all of the girls, including Asabi, are like, oh my goodness, this is far too much for me. Yeah, they're like,
yeah.
They're like, you know, the fact that Asabi had to witness violence, she's like shaken for the entire day, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
But, and even, what's her name? Hamiya, I think, the cool chick that we talked about last week.
The one that drinks a lot of sake. Yeah.
She's kind of sitting there like, oh, Jesus, you girls are so freaking delicate. But she has a conversation with, I don't know if it was the Emperor's sister or...
Okay, yeah, because the Emperor does have a sister who's friends with Asabi.
I can't remember if it's the same girl.
Okay.
She seemed new, but again, I'm so bad with faces. But she basically goes to Asabi to kind of comfort her and kind of explain a little bit more about the whole Raven Innu culture.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she talks about is that the horses are also Yatagarasu. They can transform. But their third leg has been bound with like an inhibiting charm, because they are indentured servants that have been forced into like a labor contract, and so they're not allowed to revert to their human form until their contract of servitude is done.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and Asabi's like, holy crap! I didn't know. Like, I feel so horrible now, and so it's kind of showing some really interesting layers to this. I didn't realize that literally that like everyone was a Yatagarasu.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like a mix of just regular people and ravens. But you know, a friend lady was talking how, you know, most of us spend like most of our lives in our human forms, but when I was a kid I used to transform a lot before I knew that it was taboo to do that. And so there's just these really interesting kind of wrinkles being added to this whole like magical raven people society, and how that's like intermingling with the traditional Japanese kind of politics and social mores. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I've gotten kind of hints that like at least the upper crust northern raven people didn't transform, or like they stay in their human form all the time, because that was something they kind of were throwing around about Yukia's clan and stuff, because they're more like backwater or rural, or you know,
yeah.
a slight that they spend more time in both, whereas everyone up at the castle, you know, does not. One thing I did think was interesting, and I don't know if this is touched on in episode 3, but when Yukia first shows up, the place is oddly barren as far as like people. Like when they first get to the castle, he's like,
oh yeah,
here and stuff. And it seemed to be the same way around the Emperor. Is that because the Emperor is just on high alert for someone trying to kill him? So like,
I think, like, yeah, no, I think around? So. Yeah. Cause at the end of the episode, they're basically, one of the little things that happens is that, the Emperor has Yukia water all of his plants.
Mm-hmm.
But he specifies for the plants in the blue pots, you need to use the well water. But then the plants for the white pots, or vice versa, you need to fly all the way over to the waterfall and get the spring water.
Okay.
And it's like this huge deal. And Yukia's like, why the hell is he making me do this? Is this some weird rich person thing? But later in the episode, you see that all the plants that were watered with the well water, the emperor's water, were dead. So the water is being poisoned.
Oh. And so,
okay. And so, yeah, the Emperor, and there's also this, they talk about how he basically spends all of his time in the red light district.
Yeah.
Instead of with his, you know, with the actual noble ladies.
Yeah.
And so the Emperor is completely isolating himself, basically.
Yeah.
And at the end of the episode, he gets Yukiya and he's like, we need to go confront, you know, these people that I think are, you know, they're making moves against me and they're trying to stir the pot. And so I think that's why is that the Emperor's assistant even says, oh yeah, he doesn't want to be around the ladies because he doesn't want to get them involved in all of the backstabbing and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I mean, if this is all happening, you would think that if anyone picked up on supposed favoritism, then that particular female suitor becomes a liability, right?
Yeah, or a target.
Yeah. You know, you pick the favorite, you kidnap her and demand ransom or, you know, other sorts of things.
I think the reason that he was spying on the girls is that he doesn't even trust that one of the girls isn't in on this plot.
Oh, yeah. If one of them is in on the plot, do you have any suspicions on who it could be at this point?
It's obviously not Asabi, and I think Kamiya would be too obvious.
Right.
Not obvious, but like just wouldn't fit that archetype.
Yeah.
There's the two kind of catty girls who I keep confusing. I don't know their names yet.
Yeah. There's the one who comes off as very nice, but is just a little more clever about how she is mean. And then there's the other one who she's from the same area as Yukiya. And all we've really seen her do is kind of stick up for Asabi and, you know, break the cup. But
yeah. But they don't like, there's tension with each other, I guess. Like,
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I guess it would, if it's going to be one of them, I guess it would be kind of down to those two.
Yeah. I'm just going to roll the dice and say it would be fun if Asabi is secretly like a mastermind.
That would be great.
Yeah.
You know, like the sheltered, quiet, delicate waif actually turns out to be, that would be awesome. I would actually love that.
Yeah.
That would be I'm putting
my chips down on that bet and we'll have to see if it pays off. Cause I think this is running for like 24 episodes or something. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. You know, we'll have to see.
But yeah. I'm liking this. I for a court drama, I was a little kind of on the fence as to how much I was going to dig it, but
yeah,
even this episode where honestly kind of slow, I didn't mind it. It was fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll have to catch up on that episode and then we'll talk about episode 4 next week. But I think that about does us for now. So thanks everyone again for showing up. Again, this is the In and After Show, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. We are on Twitter and we are on YouTube and we are on Facebook streaming at those times every week, except for when we're not and it's a different time and we don't tell you like last week. But hey,
gotta keep you on your toes.
Yeah, gotta keep you on your toes. So thanks again to everybody. And again, drop that Kaiju number 8 X Venom Dojin links in the comments. I will be looking for those. If you don't, I will be disappointed. You don't want to disappoint me. Okay. No. All right. All right, everybody. See you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.